Dr. John Verapen is a former pharmaceutical industry insider telling us what he knows about the pharmaceutical industry, which he says is not about making you well or curing anything. It's about coming up with something that'll treat a problem to the tune of billions of dollars. So they treat it without curing it. It's the best possible case scenario for them. Why cure something if that puts you out of business? So we'll pick up the conversation right there. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Dr. John Verapen just threw out a challenge to me, and I haven't been able to, I was even searching around on the internet, and I haven't been able to find one pharmaceutical answer to a disease. I haven't, I mean, I can find things that are more curable now, but in the last 50 years, what has actually been cured as opposed to what has been a treatment? That's a very interesting proposal. And you say that this is intentional, that in your experience as a pharmaceutical insider, that they don't want to cure these things. And they actually, you know, this is part of their company policy to not cure stuff, but just treat it.
Well, it's a strategy, marketing strategy. Before I continue, let me just say to all the listeners that if I were to tell everything that's in my book, it'll take me, well, you got to bring me on for two more shows.
Right.
But in the book, I have detailed descriptions of a lot of stuff that has happened and what I know. But what I would like to talk about on this show, for which I'm very grateful that you guys brought me on, is to let the people know what is happening currently and how it affects them. Because there is so much going on, and these people are getting away with murder on a daily basis.
All right, who's being murdered?
People.
Yeah, okay, but who? I mean, like, takers of what? How can we make a charge like that and say the pharmaceutical industry is murdering people?
Okay. Let's take the antidepressants, for example.
Okay.
Which is now being used on children. And this is the big motivation for me when I found out some years ago that they're approving these drugs, like Prozac and the Zoloft and whatever. They're all being used on children. And what made me even more mad this week was a Congress here in Leipzig in Germany starting today, Sunday morning. It's called infant psychiatry.
Infant psychiatry.
Yes.
Okay, explain that.
I have a lot of difficulty explaining it because I'm shocked.
Okay. I mean, it's obviously not talk therapy. It's not that kind of psychiatry.
No. They are going to screen newborn babies from 0 to 3 years old for mental defects. Now, I want to know how these psychiatrists, well, they wouldn't be able to answer because psychiatrists don't, they're just a bunch of empty-headed people with a power attached to their names. How are they going to screen this? Are they going to stick needles in their little infants and newborn babies and take blood tests and do DNA and whatever? Or are they going to perform psychiatric evaluation? What are they going to ask the kids?
I don't know. I mean, and if it's an infant, I mean, what age are they really talking about doing infant psychiatry?
0 to 3 years old.
How could you do that? I mean, you don't even have a fully formed brain out of the womb.
This is awesome, man. Awesome. And we have people dying every day from a lot of other things. And they're not paying any attention to it. They're not. Where is all the investment they talk about on the with the researchers?
Tell me about that. No, actually, I think that's a really good question. Let me pursue that. So, when you're head of the company, when you were with Eli Lilly in Sweden, what was the demand for drugs to fix what at the time? I imagine cancer, other things. And what was the company actually spending on research on medications that would actually cure an ailment like cancer, a disease?
Okay,
like cancer?
When I in the Swedish days when I was the executive there, the company told us, you know, they with their pep talk, oh, we invest $1 million a day in research. Now let's go back 10 years and say $1 million a day. That's 365 a year. Multiply that. That's over $3 billion, $4 billion. Now, what have they discovered, or what did they bring out that will help the people with those $3 billion in research? But that's only talk. They know how to cook the books. When they, if you look at their books, what is research and what is? I would say the research money they spend goes to the politicians and the researchers and the universities that they literally own, and not to mention, at least, the insurance companies.
Yeah, the insurance part of this is another big piece. At least that's how it is in the United States. I don't know how it works in Europe, but
well, they in right now, right this minute in Germany, for example, the insurance companies now trying to increase the premium in Germany, where the healthcare is a right. It's not an option. And as like your friend Glenn Beck said, they're all socialists and communists over here. Now, the reason for that, as I see it, is that the drug companies come into Germany, who, by the way, is very closely aligned with the U.S. They're like a little brother for the U.S. They come in here and set prices of their drugs without any government control. They just put whatever price they want. I mean, the costs are humongous.
All right. I don't want to stray too far away from what we were talking about, which was who is actually getting murdered. So let's say they are, you know, they're charging crazy prices. They're getting a lot wherever they can get it. They get as much as they can for these pills. You're saying the murder is in the fact that they're not researching other things that they could cure, and that they could be curing other things, but they don't have an interest in it. So instead, they just treat the symptoms of it.
Yeah, no,
because
no,
that's
no,
where the money
well,
is.
Exactly the way you put it.
Okay.
The way I see it is that they bring out drugs for an indication, and they hide the dangerous side effects of these drugs and still put it that they know that these drugs do all these things, and they still put it out and sell because they have their connections at the FDA and other people, other regulatory authorities. So they give their drug out there, and people have to take it because the doctors are prone to, manipulated, because the only information they get about drugs comes from the pharma industry. And these guys, they want to make money also. I mean, the doctors are no angels. They prescribe the drugs, and people die. Now, there's a 3-year-old girl here in Germany, I found in the literature, that died taking one of these antidepressants from Eli Lilly and Company. And there are many more from drugs from other companies also. I mean, how can this happen? The U.S. justice system has caught these people performing criminal acts in terms of their marketing of their drugs.
Right.
Finds them. Look.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Exactly. Look, from 2000, from 2000 to 2008, Eli Lilly has made close to $300 billion of income. They've been caught the last 6-7 years, these companies, Pfizer, Lilly, all of them, they have been fined in a range of $2.5 billion and more for illegal marketing of drugs.
Right.
And for drugs that
just kill off
a lot of people.
Right.
And the reports are there. Look, the medical issue regarding pharmaceuticals is quite clear. You have top researchers who have come up with all the medical devastation of all these drugs, and yet these people still continue. Now, the U.S. government, I mean the justice system, has fined recently, in the last couple of years, all the big companies. Pfizer, for example, $2.3 billion settlement. Eli Lilly, in a drug called Zyprexa, or with that drug, $1.4 billion, because they were doing off-label marketing, that is, selling the drug to indications or people who were sick that the drug was not approved for. And they die.
Right.
And they pay their fine, and they continue to sell the drugs. Now, how is this possible?
That they pay the fine and continue to sell it. If they need, they should be yanking it. But they did make them, the government did make them take a couple of these products off the market, and they never came back.
Which ones?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. I thought, wasn't there
I'm sorry to put you on the spot there.
That's
Ian,
okay.
The reason why they pay these fines, and I mean, these fines have escalated from 15, 20 years ago from $15,000
right
to billions of dollars today. I mean, hundreds don't work in the economic society and with the industries, and especially in the pharmaceutical industry. Billion is the word from now on.
Right.
Even your government is in on that one. Now, if they pay the fine, and this is the way the law, this is the way I was told that the law is, if they pay, they continue to fight in a court case, the government then has the right to put a block on the product. It's not to be sold until the thing is settled. But you don't want to block a billion dollar product. You pay the fine.
Right.
Then nobody can do anything. Only they, the company, can say, yes, we are pulling this drug off the market. Or the FDA, they get off their lazy butts over there.
Right.
And say, yes, this drug has to be taken off.
Again, we're talking with Dr. John Verapin. He's the author of Side Effects Death, and he talks about, in particular, Prozac, but also just the pharmaceutical industry practices that he observed as an insider. So I've heard this story from some other people, too. Recently, there's a couple other books that have come out of people who were marketing, you know, for different products, the tobacco industry or for other companies that produce a less than healthy product. And everybody kind of says the same thing. There's a period of time when they thought that the company was trying to do the right thing, and then they realized afterward that was all a public image, and that inside it was just about making as much money as you could any way you could do it, and justifying it on the basis that the organization is there. They have an obligation to the shareholder first and foremost. That's why they're there, and that's why they have to do this, because it is, after all, a for-profit company. So if it's going to be for-profit, and we know it's a for-profit company, why should we be surprised or at all shocked or bothered by the idea that they happen to be really good at it?
Because we're dealing with human health. I don't care what the car industry does. I don't care what the oil industry. Well, look what the oil industry is doing to you guys over there right now. They're messing up the Gulf because it's all because of profit. When you look in between the lines, BP hasn't done its job properly according to regulation in terms of drilling for the oil. They were cutting corners because it cost a lot of money to do the things right. So the pharma industry, I don't care about everything. There's corruption all over the world in all sections of business. But why on human health? That I have a lot of difficulty understanding.
I understand that. I heard a quote. This is just because of something you just said. I heard it the other day, and it's been staying with me ever since. And here's the quote. The quote is that freedom creates prosperity, and prosperity controls freedom. That we're always in a place that if you have a lot of freedom, if you can make a new product, if you can make a new company, if you do whatever, you can create a lot of prosperity. But then prosperity turns around and begins to restrict freedom, because that's the only way that prosperity can always be guaranteed of continuing. I thought it was an interesting idea.
Yeah, but in terms of prosperity, sometimes rule freedom.
That's what I mean, though. I mean, this is an example of that to me, that, you know, you have a company that was created on the grassroots and, you know, kind of pulled up by the bootstraps, but maybe later on, prosperity means curtailing other people's freedom in order to maintain a level of prosperity. Then what's the remedy for this? I mean, in side effects, death, in your own life, what are the remedies?
Well, in the beginning, when I started this thing, and this was all prompted because I have a little son. He was born almost 6 years ago. And that's when I started talking and writing the books and so forth. Because I don't want to see him grow up to be a pill-popping guinea pig for the pharmaceutical industry. And he is a little, nice, bouncing, healthy boy. Now, the drug companies should not make this prosperity thing we're talking about. And by the way, freedom together with prosperity breeds corruption. And not in one place, all over. So why does the pharmaceutical companies are able to become prosperous at the expense of human life? The way to do it, and when I started with all of this, I thought maybe, you know, we can bring them down. I mean, they have tried to bring me down. Well, they have managed. I'm financially ruined anyways. But that don't bother me. I'm going to continue as long as I live to fight against them. Now I realize I cannot do anything to bring them down. I don't think anybody can do that right now. But what we can do is invoke more regulation or better regulation, and also try to create transparency among these people, because we need the drug company. There are things out there that we need, and they should start looking at the alternatives available, natural medicines, for example.
What about the claim that the reason why the pharmaceutical industry exists the way it does is because there's so much government regulation that they can't help but have to come up with these high profit drugs, because that's how expensive it is to run a modern drug company. I want you to hang on for that answer, and I will get it next from Dr. John Verapin, the author of Side Effects Death. We're talking about the corruption within the pharmaceutical industry from a former insider. And we'll get to your questions and comments coming up soon, I promise you, because I see the phones ringing a lot. I know there's many people out there that have things they want to say. It just won't be yet. But coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to as many of them as we can. So hang in there. Write them down. Don't forget them. Your questions for Dr. John Verapin, who is not only the author of Side Effects Death, but you can go to YouTube and you can see him lecture there. And he explains many of the things in greater detail that he's talking about tonight. I want to know, what is there? Is it the big problem? Is it government interference in the first place. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Dr. John Verapin, the author of Side Effects Death, is just about to explain the relationship between government's interest in keeping the pharmaceutical industry just the way it is, too. Profitable and not curing anybody. They're making money off this program as well. Next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. The book is Side Effects Death. You can link up to Dr. John Verapin at coasttocoastam.com. So the pharmaceutical industry says, look, our hands are tied. It's so expensive to bring a drug to the market because of what the government forces us to do all along the way. Not to mention the fact that they pay their taxes like anybody else, and the government turns around and makes them have to come up with these highly profitable drugs in order to pay for the research for these other drugs. What's wrong with that theory?
That's what you're telling me now. It's a very difficult proposition. I mean, okay, lobbying. You've heard the word. It's the highest form of corruption. The pharma industry has 450 lobbyists in Washington right now. They're probably going out to work today or yesterday or whatever. And they spend billions of dollars just on lobbying. And all your politicians, not all of them maybe, but a lot of them are involved. Now, the politicians make and propose legislation and things like that. And these guys cannot be prosecuted for anything they do, but they do collect the money. The researchers are now involved. Researchers are paid to write what the pharma industry wants them to say or write. They have marketing professionals writing letters. They pay the researcher. Bang. They just sign their names. The universities, the training for doctors and physicians, the curriculum hasn't changed much in years. The pharma industry pushes money in there. There is the military, for example. They never talk about how many drugs the military in the United States buy from the pharmaceutical companies just to put in a warehouse in case of epidemic or pandemic.
Right.
Take the vaccines, for example. That's a big, big, big scam. The H1N1 vaccine, you've heard about that, Ian?
Right.
I have documents that I found in Belgium a few months ago. I was making a speech there. I found some documents that shows that the pharmaceutical companies were negotiating with governments, and this is a document from the ministry. It shows that they were negotiating the H1N1 vaccine with the governments, pricing, the labeling, and everything. I have pictures of it also. In January 2009, the vaccine debate started in May 2009. These people have been preparing for a pandemic that was a planted thing, I believe. This is my personal opinion.
Well, I understand that, but we would want them to be prepared for every pandemic, wouldn't we?
How do you know there's going to be a pandemic 2 years ahead? You have to plan that.
Well,
Take the bird flu as an example, right, some years ago.
Right.
What happened to that pandemic? What, they vaccinated all the birds?
Right. Yeah.
You know? Now they're vaccinating, they want to vaccinate children, and they're coming with mandatory vaccinations and so forth. And they don't know any, first of all, they don't know much about these vaccines. These vaccines are killing people. If they were to do their work properly and present safety data with the vaccines, I don't have a problem with that. But there is no safety data because the pharmaceutical industry, when they make a vaccine, which comes from natural things like, you know, they grow the vaccine in eggs and they use some cells from animals and so forth.
Right.
But to make it profitable, they have to put other things in there.
That phone is going to wear me out.
And the other things is what is causing the problem. Because if they were to make the vaccine pure as it is to give to people, I mean, the cost involved is horrendous. So they dilute the thing and they put in some other stuff in there, like the squalene, the mercury. Now, hear this. Eli Lilly and Company, and I don't want to make this look like I'm, you know, going after Eli Lilly. Of course, they're part of the program. But I have worked in many other big companies. I know what goes on. So it's not only Lilly. And I am not out for revenge, like many people have been saying. You know, Lilly, the pharma industry has tried to defame me by saying I'm out for revenge and that I am a member of Scientology and all of this, whatever. I'm not. I have nothing to do with Scientology and whatever. And I'm not out for revenge because what can I do to get revenge? These people are too big. And I'm no David, you know, even though I try.
Well, you know, actually, before you go into the thought on that, what would be wrong with revenge if you knew that they were doing something wrong and, as you say, you could prove it, and that the inspiration for you proving it came from their treatment of you, so you decide to say, all right, if those are the rules, then here, let me play all the cards that I have in my hand. If that's revenge, well, so be it. I mean, why? I mean, if it really comes down to either you have the proof for these claims or you don't. And if you do, then is it revenge or is it just justice?
Well, for me, it's justice and also an opportunity to help other people, to create what is needed right now is that people, all the listeners out there, for example, to create a higher level of awareness where they can take decisions concerning their own health. Don't let the pharma companies do it for them. Don't even let the doctors do it, because long ago you run to the doctor, you look up at him, you know, because he's sitting next to God.
Right.
Right? But he doesn't know anything.
Well, I know a few doctors who feel like God is sitting up next to them, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I don't mean to get you off track too, because you were starting to say something about mercury, or you were starting to say
that's one with Eli Lilly, the vaccine some years ago.
Thermosol, didn't they do the preservative for the vaccines?
Exactly, that's the one I'm talking about.
Right
now,
Thermosol.
The company got an exempt from litigation by the government. The only company, and all the other companies didn't get anything, but that company, Lilly, was protected by the law that people cannot sue them anymore for that product and the devastation that it caused. Then when the vaccine, the H1N1 vaccine was being put out, and the CDC and all these people are talking about it, the ban was temporary. The ban on the thimerosal was temporarily lifted so that they can come with a vaccine that contained this preservative.
Yeah, so this preserves the vaccine, but wasn't the argument for that that since the government was mandating that people have these vaccines, it would be wrong to turn around after the government said people had to have them to be able to sue the company? That they're saying, look, you made people take this. Don't blame us. If our product wasn't perfect, we were still acting in good faith.
No. That is what they would like to tell people that happened. Because, you know, they're good with setting up words to manipulate people, because people are still living in fear when they get sick, and they believe the drugs that are out there and the doctors are going to help them. This is a scary thing. What they don't realize, and what I would like to tell everybody, is They are nothing but consumers, not patients. They are consumers just like, I mean, why would the car companies put more effort into safety in the cars than the pharmaceutical companies are doing with medicines?
Well, at least in the United States, it was because the government made them. The government made the car industry make cars safer. And they said at the time, this will drive us bankrupt. We won't be able to afford it. And obviously, they've done just fine. But it isn't safety that ruined them. It was bad design and stupid car names and features that people didn't want.
Why don't the politicians come in and do it with the pharma industry? And I'll tell you why.
Make it more safe right now.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Many of the politicians you have right now have been working with the pharma industry, directors, vice presidents, and so forth. The father of George Bush, the senior, he was on the board of directors of Eli Lilly and Company.
Right, for a long time.
There was a governor, Mitch Daniels. He was also vice president with Lilly. Look at that, the other politician, Rumsfeld. He got a lot of money out of J.D. Sir with the equally aspartame business.
Aspartame, yeah.
Yeah. Then the guy who was the chairman, he only retired last year, the chairman of board of Eli Lilly and Company, is good buddies with George Bush. And George Bush made him a member of the Homeland Security Committee in the United States. And he's only been a citizen, acquired citizen in the States for 3 years. He was born in Morocco.
Right.
You know, all of these things put together, then you have the order. When the pharmaceutical companies open up and say, jump, everybody says, how high?
Right. No, I think there's truth to that. I mean, I think that we can see that just in the literature, in the newspapers and other books that corroborate what you're saying, is that the pharmaceutical industry is disproportionately powerful, perhaps, that they have a lot of money to play with and they use it to their own advantage. But I still come back to really the core claim of this, and I can't stress it enough, is that they really aren't, you're saying, Dr. John Verapin, you're saying they are not trying to cure people. They just want to keep you sick enough to keep making money off you.
Well, it's simple logic. If they, the chronic patients, you know, diabetes, Parkinson's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, all of these patients, they live a long time if you give them the right medicine to maintain. They can't cure it. If they cured diabetes, think about the math. How many billions of dollars do you think they're going to lose? They cure AIDS. How many billions of dollars they're going to lose? No revenue. This is what it's all about.
Well, okay, but pardon me for playing a little bit of devil's advocate here, because I accept the premise of what you're saying, that it's not in their financial best interests to cure anybody. But if it's not them, then maybe we should just skip that part and just simply say, this is a pharmaceutical industry that's a for-profit company that's designed to create the vaccines or create the products, whatever it is that's going to make them money. But then we say, well, let's create something else. If it's too late for that and Big Pharma is not interested in curing these things, can we make a not-for-profit pharmaceutical industry that will go after the real, the things that are really killing us and just cure those so they don't have to worry about making a profit?
Well, that wouldn't I don't think that would be happening. So for that to happen, you've got to have honest people on the planet, and there are not many around.
Okay, well, there's you and me. We could start one.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, with your $10 job and my $5 job,
all
how
right,
are we going to do that?
Well,
the thing is that,
we'll charm
and,
people.
And you know this, Ian, as well as I do, and I think all the listeners out there know, at least today, currently, there are thousands and thousands of reports all around the world that natural medicines cure many diseases. And up till now, the only thing that has happened is that the pharmaceutical companies have been trying to suppress that section of medicine or treatment.
Well, give me an idea of that. What is it that you, Dr. John Verapan, author of the book Side Effects Death, what do you think the pharmaceutical industry could cure next year if they wanted to?
You mean if they have?
If they decided, you know, there's these natural medicines out there, we're going to use these, they could start curing people tomorrow by marketing. What would be the things they could cure?
Cancer.
How?
Oh, there are things out there, supposedly, and with from the reports that I've been reading, that stops and kills cancer. The other thing is preventative medicine. You know, instead of telling people that Burger King has a double Big Mac or whatever, and it's only at half price, go and tell them to eat properly. Try to bring out foods that will help the human being maintain their body, their immune system, for example, so that they can continue to live normally and have a good life and also be a powerful tool in the workforce.
But that information's out there. You can get it from the internet. You can get it from all sorts of books that say, here's how to live a longer, healthier life. That's, to me, I mean, I don't know that it's the government's job to be out there to say, don't go to Burger King, eat alfalfa. I don't see where that's the government's responsibility in a free
yeah,
society.
Yeah, but that's because people have been groomed to want the quick fix. There is no quick fix. And this is what this, and there's also another thing that is happening, and the American people, I believe, have been living in fear for the last 100 years. They're enslaved by these corporations, the pharmaceutical industrial complex, for example. And to change all of that overnight, it wouldn't happen, my friend.
I understand. All right, so you said cancer. What else do you think we could cure next year if the pharmaceutical industry, you know, for example, decided to get religion, or they were not for profit, or that they could actually go out and cure something? What else could they cure?
Everything. The chronic diseases, diabetes, for example.
We think that's curable. What would be, you know, I mean, if I'd say that I think it's easy to say that they could cure diabetes until I know that there is a specific thing out there that they are not using, that they're not trying because they don't want it to work.
Well, trust me on this one. There are things out there that they have shelved. They have a secret type of vault with things that are in a pipeline. They call it the pipeline. There are things there that can come out and clean up a lot of illnesses, but they would not bring it out because it will damage their business. You know, you don't want to cure diabetes that's billions and billions of dollars because these patients, they live a long time.
Okay. Let's open up the phones here. We'll grab as many of the calls as we can. I know the phones have been very active already for Dr. John Verapan, author of Side Effects Death. We started the conversation about his rise to the top. We talked about how he had become the head of Eli Lilly in Sweden, how they had sacked him at one point, even though he had done everything they had asked him to do, including bribe officials to expedite the approval of Prozac. We talked about how he knew that Prozac didn't work. A lot of people knew Prozac would kill certain people, especially because of the inclination to make people more susceptible to thoughts of suicide under the influence of the product, and yet they still went through with it. And we know here it is years later, they're still doing stuff like trying to get infant psychiatry to catch on because it's a great way to start medicating babies before their brains are even fully formed. We know they're wrong. That's where some of the conversation went earlier. Go back and catch it on Streamlink if you missed it. More than your questions on side effects, death coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.